There are guys in our organization that are, you know, beyond smart, and I'm glad they wear a white hat and not a black hat, because these guys are, you learn a lot from them and you can see what they really can do. And you're just glad they're on the good guy side, not the bad guy side.
Yeah.
You know, protecting our clients, protecting us, that kind of stuff.
You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network.
Real Business Connections Network.
Powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to Rochester Business Connections, powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC, where I get the chance to chat with Rochester, New York's very best business owners, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders. I am your host, Ben Albert. Don't forget to subscribe, and remember, we don't do advertisements. My fee for this show is simple. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Let's get started. Welcome, everyone, once again to Rochester Business Connections on the Real Business Connections Network. I'm here today with Andrew Hoyen. Andrew, what's up? How are you?
How are you, Ben? Nice to chat again, as always. So excited about having a conversation today.
Yeah, Andrew and I grabbed a coffee in the 2022. We're on to 2023. And I'm excited to introduce him to anyone who ultimately hasn't met Andrew yet. He is the president and COO of Infinite Group, Inc. At IGI, they're solving cybersecurity challenges. I'm tongue-tied today, my friend.
with a
people-first approach, cybersecurity challenges with a people-first approach. You are helping take this company to the next level, and I appreciate to kind of just dive deep and see where this conversation takes us today, man.
That's awesome. Looking forward to it. You know, lot for us to kind of dive into and probably digress into in some cases.
So we'll talk cybersecurity in a second, but what stands out to me is people first approach. Well, what does that mean to you as a business leader creating, you know, services for people by people? Tell me about this people first approach.
It's kind of interesting because in the world of technology, that, you know, whether you live in it or you're part of it, or, you know, you run organizations, or you're part of companies that are technology driven. You know, I think people tend to think that everything is, it automatically happens, right? It's, you know, some a robot, right? Some piece of software, something along those lines is fixing this or doing this for me. But, you know, our approach to it has been unique. One is, you know, because we're traditionally a services organization, we said, look, we brought the people aspect to cybersecurity. You need bodies. You need people. You need to have interaction, you know, and you have smart people that are interacting, you know, from our side with organizations, and then teaching them, right? Guiding them down a path, helping them understand where the pitfalls are, where the opportunities for improvement are, et cetera. Then you flip it, right? Because we also have a software division. You can't build software without people, right? So we even use that as our mantra to say, you know, we build software and a particular product called Nodeware because it helped the people side of our business. That's how it really was born out of, right? We had consultants that needed a tool, and we built a tool to help them. And we realized there's a market for this tool, this product, right? This SaaS-based solution that still needs human interaction, right? Still you can feed as much data into this thing, but you know, when Batman fed something out of the bat computer, right? He still had to read it, still had to interpret it, and still had to act on it. Right. And so that's why that blend, a unique blend of people and cyber, is very critical. Right. You just aren't going to automate everything. And we're trying to automate as much as we can. We also realize that there's a human element behind cyber and technology that has to interact. So that was the catalyst behind, you know, the cybersecurity people, right? All that stuff, because it's critical that you have both.
It is. It's a slightly philosophical question, but do you feel like a lot of tech companies are losing the people end of things? Well, what have you experienced in the field?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that resonates with a lot of our clients and customers is the fact that, you know, we have a human element in an approach, and it's not just formulaic, right? It's not just, oh, do this, you're done, you're fine, right? It's a that's the consultative side of our organization, right? When we put a chief information security officer in an organization to work with them, it's not just, well, just follow the formula and you're fine, right? There's human interaction that has to happen. You know, flip side that to Nodeware even, right? You have to, you know, we built a solution that has to have some level of human interaction, you know, because you have to interpret and you have to react and you have to do things as a result of the information that we're feeding you in an automated manner. You know, so yeah, I think some technology companies are preaching the mantra of, look, it's just put information, you know, put technology in and you're fine. Someone's got to know how to put it together. Someone's got to, you know, make it all work together. Someone's got to interpret what the information is telling you, you know, and so that's that gray area. That's that beautiful gray area that you live in, because it can't just be A or B. It's got to be A and B together.
Both. I say it, I've said it all the time as a marketer, people mm-hmm. buy from people that sell from people that renew from people. So humanity and leadership and caring and empathy is never going to go away. Personalization is never going to go away. I know that that's another kind of staple of your company, really personalizing when necessary.
Right.
What does that look like? Again, from tech, it's like this system works, this security works, let's just use it. Tell me a little bit about sometimes how you might have to pivot or personalize based on what, again, people need.
Yeah, I mean, it's interpretation, right? If you run into a situation where you think you've been compromised, right? And it's the easiest way to say this. Somebody goes, oh my gosh, I think we've got an incident that could lead to a breach or something along the line. They want to talk to somebody because they've got to get a perspective, right? Is this a problem? What should I do next, right? What's the playbook, you know, and in some cases? And that's what this whole thing becomes. You know, you just don't sit in a vacuum and you know, you can yell at your piece of software and say, why aren't you doing this? But sometimes you just need another person, a consultant, right? Somebody to talk to say, I got a problem, help me figure it out, right? And then, you know, flip that to software. I've got a problem, help me figure it out. So you help people, like with our software, you know, we identify the problem, we guide you down a path to help fix it. But at some point, you may have to talk to somebody. It might be us or it might be somebody else as to, you know, the MSP that's buying our software and reselling it and using it in the environment, right? Somebody along those lines that's going to need to be an interaction point for the end customer, because sometimes data is weird. Sometimes information isn't clear. And, you know, you have to navigate those waters. And sometimes you use technology, sometimes you use the human brain, which is one heck of a piece of technology, right?
The brain can still navigate. And so you're clarifying, just yelling at my software isn't going to fix it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Tearing your hair out. Why aren't you working? Right. I mean, anybody uses a laptop, or think about all the interactions you have with a phone or a PD, you know, a personal device, or, you know, some sort of something, some piece of technology. You're like, I don't get it. Why is this not working the way I think it should be working? You know, so you either call one of the, you know, your smart friend that figures it out, or you use the you use technology like Google to go figure out, you know, how do I fix the problem? But at some point, yeah, you still have to, you're interacting with somebody who wrote that information for you, right? Then that's the thing, is like, you know, you write these things and you give information to people, and hopefully they can help. It helps interpret how to get out of a jam or how to wait. What's the next step?
I know personally, if I'm in a jam, first thing I try to do is force quit. Second thing I try to do is unplug it and plug it back in. And if I'm in a scenario where I can't do either of those, or neither of those work, it sure helps to have someone in your corner showing you exactly where your blind spots are.
It is. And we try to teach people, you know, like we have on the software product, we have a knowledge database, and we try to teach people to go there first, right? Use that as your tool before you go ask. Because in some cases you can find it out. You're kind of teaching people to fish a little bit, mm-hmm. right? I run into this. If I have a problem with, like, you know, my Mac or my iPhone, I tend to call one of the gurus in the organization. I'm like, I could probably Google that and figure that out myself. But, you know, sometimes you become too reliant on somebody. So you kind of have to find that blend. We try to help people, you know, work through those scenarios on their own. And then, you know, when you've exhausted some of those, and then we're there to kind of catch you as you're falling.
Yeah, kind of catch you and provide the information and be there if I need to call, ask someone something. I want to, in a moment, like I'm curious about software product, and I know you're making changes and innovating the company, but before we just dive too deep in products and features, I kind of want to learn a little bit about where you came from to give us a little bit of context and then talk about where we're going for the future. So, I mean, I say this a lot. You didn't just roll out of bed one day and had the capacity and leadership skills and knowledge to, you know, be a CEO, president of a company. Tell us a little bit about the come up, where you came from and what brought you to where you are today.
Ben, it's a great question. It's not an easy or straight line answer, you know. Yeah. And I don't know many people that have those straight line answers. And sometimes I look back and as I try to guide my children, right, who are in their 20s now and going down the same path of maybe you don't need to take a winding road to get there, right? So you know, I started out in the world of engineering and sciences and healthcare focused mainly, and thought I was going to go down one path of wanting to go to medical school, and then realized and woke up one day and said, it's not what I want to do, but wanted to continue to educate myself. So it worked a little bit. And I, you know, ended up getting 2 graduate degrees along the way. I should have just gone to medical school. Probably would have spent the same amount of time. Right. But it's a journey. Right. And, mm-hmm. I think about this a lot. I never really had that kind of guidance as a kid, you know, when you're 18 to 21 years old. You know, figuring out that path is very difficult. Like, what do you want to do? In many cases, you don't know.
Yeah.
Right. And you have to sample along the way to do that. Some do it through more education. Some people do it through, you know, the real world of jobs and everything else. So, been very entrepreneurial my whole life. Right. I mean, you know, started out and thinking about, you know, how do you automate things early on and electronic medical records, and that was kind of my first foray into, I'll call it failure, failing forward and, you know, starting a company and trying to get it to a point in the mid 90s. It was, when electronic medical records weren't even heard of, and archiving data in the cloud and all these things, and, taught me a whole lot. And I started to realize I enjoyed that, but, you know, also, you know, what were some areas that I could learn? You know, so I've had a number of different stints in different industries, right? And it helped me build out my toolkit, right? So I've worked for, you know, the Global Crossings of the world. I've worked for Eastman Kodak in their health division, which became Carestream Health. I've worked for a large division of Toyota, you know, and all along the way, it was kind of building that skill set, right? Marketing and operations and technology and, you know, services and things like that, that helped me get to a point, you know, 8 years ago when IGI was, you know, looking, and a mentor of mine, Don Reeve, the former CIO at Wegmans, you know, said, hey, this would be a really interesting company. They need some, you know, want some help and are looking for somebody to come in and, you know, help kind of create some guidance and direction. And so it's where I am today, you know, and, you know, whether I've succeeded or failed yet is still to be determined in that world. And, working through it. Right. But it's been an exciting ride and a lot of cool things that we've done and, you know, taking the company in some great directions and where it was even 8 years ago and, you know, kind of brought it down the path of, you know, being a cyber services company and a cyber software company and having its own intellectual property, you know, and I learned a lot of that along the way from some great IP organizations, you know, Kodak and all those wonderful places to teach you all that stuff. And a little bit longer route than I wanted to take, but it's served me pretty well and taught me a lot of things. Taught me a lot of things around people, about people and managing and, you know, dealing with people and learning. So lot going on. That's how I got to where I am today. I could bore you with a lot more details, but that's enough.
Well, you mentioned you don't know if your successor fail. If you're failing, you're sure looking good doing it. I know that much. But It's such a good point. It's not always a straight line procedural thing. At times we might even feel literally like a feather in the wind and we don't even know why we're going in one direction, but it sounds like you were able to grab a lot of skill sets and knowledge and wisdom from going in these diagonal directions. So when you landed at home, you have the capacity to kick butt. That's what I get from that story there. And I'm wondering, because so you said it's been 8 years since you joined IGI.
Yep.
Tell me about the transformation from when you walk in the door, and I don't know if you get nerves. I do. I'm not the most extroverted person on the earth. I get nerves. I walk in and sometimes I feel imposter. I'm new. I don't know the team. I don't know the systems. Yeah. What was it like when you started, and then tell me how the next 8 years, like how you've developed, you know?
Some of that is, you know, it's, yeah, you, I think you'd only be human if you didn't have some sort of feeling, right? I mean, if you didn't have, you know, butterflies in your stomach and, you know, playing sports or doing whatever, you know, performing, you know, an instrument in front of people, all these things, I mean, you got to have that. It just makes you normal, makes you human, right? That you got to, and it, but how do you manage it? And yeah, walking in the door, I mean, I knew there was a critical job to do, right? There were some changes that needed to be made in the organization. I've been pretty good change agent in my career, right? In different roles and, you know, finding out, you know, where the areas, the problems are, trying to fix them and moving us down a different path. So yeah, I mean, you come in, you're a foreign body in an organization, right? Mm-hmm. Especially a small one, right? I mean, you got to realize that you're not, I didn't walk into a 1,000 person organization. I walked into a 50 to 60 person organization. So it even has more of an impact because like, who's a new guy? What's this mean? What's he going to do? And, you know, you learn. It's you try to assimilate and learn first, right? You want to understand all of what's going on. You do homework ahead of time. And then when you get into it, you realize that whatever homework you did only got you 30 or 40% of the way there, you know? And so you continue to learn what's going on, read the people, read the understanding, and then you have to make changes. That's business changes. That's personnel changes. Those are all the things that become part of this. I saw the great bones of an organization that's been around in one way, shape, or form for a long time. Saw that it could be the catalyst for really becoming what it was, a hot industry in cybersecurity, and taking our IT roots and, you know, an InfoSec roots and building it into something and going down this path, and then taking the next step, which was what do we need to do to make ourselves different, right? Both from a services perspective and then ultimately, you know, kind of building on the old, you know, what can we build? What can we own? You know, what can we make value for the company, right? That isn't, you know, services are wonderful, but, you know, owning intellectual property, having recurring revenue, those kind of things all become part and parcel to creating value for an organization and feeding the people around you, right? You know, you got to be careful. Right. You know, you're caring for 50 or 60 people in your organization as well. So, you know, you got to make sure that there's livelihood, and some people fit, some people don't. And, you know, you evolve, right? It's an organism that continues to evolve. That was the approach.
Let's go deeper on that approach, because you made a really good point. Did you come in and you learn what's going right? Why has this business been successful to date? Like, what are the plays? I hate the concept of like your new coach in town, show up, burn up the playbook. Your old coach sucked. Your culture sucks. I'm taking over. People don't like that. So you go in, you learn the plays, you figure out what's going well. But possibly once you know the plays and the systems, for me, sometimes I get a little anxious. I want to like change things quickly in scenarios. You learn what actually is going right, and then you kind of have that foresight to figure out where we can innovate and change. So talk a little bit about, and this isn't to make anyone or anything sound bad, but talk about, go a little deeper on a point that hadn't been developed, you know, a section you were talking about reoccurring revenue and the software services. You found some needs. Go a little bit deeper on what you discovered and how you're actually innovating. I think software is a good place to start, but you tell me.
Yeah. No, it certainly is. I mean, I'll go back to, you know, Nodeware, right? Was born out of, you know, a necessity, right? We started, you know, we had this small consulting group. They needed a solution that other third-party products were out there, but they were expensive, they were clunky, they were difficult to deploy, right? All these things. And it would just produce a tremendous amount of data and information that we'd have to spend a lot of time filtering through to produce a report for somebody. And it was kind of the, you know, I won't say it wasn't my brainchild. I think it was a collective group of us that between software development, other execs here and things like that, that, you know, we looked at this and said, how do we turn this into something, right? Because A, how do we take what we don't like and build our own solution that we like that we can utilize, right? And eliminate some cost, right? That's always good. You know, we could eliminate some cost, but at the same time, you know, build something that, you know, we're happy with and is going to give us the information that we need to be able to succeed in supporting our customers. And I think, as I said earlier, that quickly turned into, there's probably a market out here for this because that's how our competitor is selling it. And, oh, by the way, we think that there's a market that's below the enterprise world, right? How do we get into small to mid enterprise and below with a solution like this, which is really a green field? You know, there's 6 million plus small to mid enterprises in the country, right? I mean, so, and there's thousands and thousands of MSPs and VARs that sell into those environments. So how do you tap the two biggest opportunities, right? How do you build a solution that, you know, that a third party can take and bring into their ecosystem so we don't have to go door to door with it? And then how do we build something that is flexible and easy to use and is running in the background, right? All these things came out of this evolution of the product, right? And it didn't happen on day one, right? Trust me, we had some clunky things that came out of this on the early stages. And, you know, we had some, you know, early adopters that helped hone this and, you know, but ultimately learned by trial and error, you know, to build a solution that is very unique, you know, very capable of flexibility and being lightweight in this, in the market that we're serving. Right. And that's lightweight in cost. That's lightweight in deployment. That's lightweight in feeding data. I mean, and very, you know, flexible, you know, to meet the needs of vulnerability management. Vulnerability management is that whole world of how did the bad guys get in? Right. If I've got a vulnerable system, I've got a firewall that hasn't been patched. I've got a whatever, but our product identifies and tells you what you got to do to fix it. And that's very helpful because think about it. On average, every person has 3 to 4 devices, you know, in the ecosystem. You multiply that by 100 people, you know, you're figuring out how do you manage that? How do you manage servers? How do you manage all these things that are in that space that help you identify where my critical gaps and exposures are, right? Where the windows are open, where the doors are unlocked, that kind of mindset.
So I might have critical exposures. I don't know. I probably have 10 devices in this room of different kinds. Is this a service for the everyday consumer? Or are you working more with businesses and teams? Like, what does
it tend to be more business and team related, Ben? I mean, we just, you know, we thought about the consumer market, but, you know, for the most part, you know, we see a lot more impact to businesses, you know, because you can lose a lot of things, but everything from intellectual property to you could lose your business brand, you could lose a lot of money, ransomware, all these things that are out there that are people are going, it's no longer going after the Fortune, you know, 500 or Fortune 1000. It's everybody that has a business. You could be a $5 million business, you could be a $100 million business, right? Everybody has data. Mm-hmm. Everybody, that's the one thing that they want to always protect. How do you best protect your data? And people need to pay attention to that. It's critical that people pay attention to that. And that's where, you know, our product comes into play as part of the ecosystem. Right? We're not a be-all and end-all, one size fits all, one product fits all by any means.
Right.
But we are a critical entry point into that that tells you whether your iOS device, whether your Android device, whether your Linux device, whether your IoT device, right? That's a big thing. I think people think like, oh, I bought a camera, stuck it on the wall in the office. Well, most of those products come from bizarre third parties, you know, manufactured in foreign lands and, you know, are probably, you know, in some cases vulnerable to being, you know, getting exposure, right? Being attacked, right? It's, you know, type of thing. And it's an entryway. All the hackers are looking for is an entryway, right? Mm-hmm. And they're looking, they do it in an automated manner. They're looking for an entryway into your ecosystem. And once they're in, then there's all sorts of cool things that, you know, cool as a bad things that they can do, right?
That's cool for them.
Hey, cool for them, right? And it's and sometimes they like to lie late, you know, and just sit in the background and siphon off information. Other times they want to, you know, get a quick hit and hit you for ransomware and say, you want your data back, pay me, you know, 3 crypto coins or, you know, that kind of stuff. So pretty wild, some of the stories that we that we live and breathe on the services side, but it's also applicable to what we do with software.
Well, it makes sense. Let's be proactive and avoid this. Now, if I run a business, an obvious answer is reach out to your team and at least like figure out ways you can help. But just talking kind of a two-part question here. For an ordinary Joe like me, and then for a business, before I call you, an ordinary Joe like me might not call you, but this is just helpful. What are some basic things that I should be doing that I might not be? Is there any just really basic things that anyone, you know, listening to this can maybe start doing to, obviously I'm not going to be fully protected like the president or the Pope, but is there any way I can make myself a little more secure?
I mean, it's I'm not always the best guy to answer this. You know, great people to do, but I know I'm tongue in cheek, but the point is look, I mean, you can practice safe cyber hygiene and it's pretty simple, even for at the consumer level, right? Passwords, right? Don't use your maiden name, your mother's name. What I mean, all that stuff it sounds kind of goofy, but it's common sense, you know, and people are like, oh my gosh, I don't know what to, you know, I use the same one. I just changed one character. Well, you know, don't expose yourself. And that happens, whether it's on your wireless router or, you know, the password on your phone or, you know, passwords into your accounts that you have, you know, I mean, I think it's, you got to be diligent. You got to, you know, and don't write them all down on a piece of paper. So you keep them or don't keep them on an Excel file sitting on your computer that someone hacks. It goes, oh, great. I got all of Ben's
one spot,
you know, accounts and passwords. This is wonderful. It was a jackpot. You know, so I think there's things like that that the normal everyday person, you know, tend to not think about because it's like, well, what do I do? You know, I mean, use a password locker if that's the case, because that's software that's out there that helps you maintain and manage your passwords and keeps them fairly secure.
Businesses can do that as well. Around employee passwords, et cetera, et cetera. Systematized, where if you figure out one, like a email, for example, if I know your email, I probably can figure out every employee in your organization's email.
Yeah. And you know, and that's exactly right. Right. Having good, diligence, whether it's your internal IT team, or you use a third party, right? An MSP, an MSSP, one of these, you know, organizations that are out there that are your technical support organization and third party IT team, got to challenge them. I mean, you should be changing passwords on a regular basis on your systems. You should have plans for what happens if, right? I mean, those are the things that, you know, what we help with a lot of companies is, you know, going through that process of, you know, do you have plan of action and milestones to become more cyber diligent and have the systems in place and do the right things to cover you as you go forward rather than create and lock down those exposure points, you know, that are there. We all know the easiest way in is a human. Unfortunately, you know, people love to click on things. It's a shiny link. It's a whatever. And so it's teaching, right? I mean, you know, in creating cyber awareness for people and teaching them the right things to do. Rather than get in trouble with a phishing scam or adding, you know, anything. Now there's smishing, which is, you know, these are your SMS device or to a text. And people are like, oh my gosh, you know, my dad is 81. He's always like, oh, you wouldn't believe the email I got today. I just hope you didn't click on it. He goes, no, I don't, you know, but it's the same kind of concept. It's like, people are like very inherently curious. What could that be? I might be in trouble. I might have to do something. So, companies are definitely in the same boat. And, you know, understanding and knowing where your weaknesses are only going to create a stronger, you know, set of defenses for you and being knowledgeable about it.
So clarification point, if I change my password, if any of us change our password from something different than our dog or child's name, they're still going to love us the same, right?
That's right. They're not going to know you one way or the other. You know, it's funny because you don't want to. They're not going to be upset that you didn't use their name or their identity in some way, shape, or form.
If anything, they'll be upset if you use any family member but them. So it's just let's stick away. Let's do like RZ77! ZWX.
characterization. I mean, Google does a nice thing even today where if you're, you know, you're on a site and you have to create a password, they're suggesting a strong password. You know, and then there's a password locker that they have, you know, that allows you to, you know, to help you remember it, that kind of stuff. So there's all sorts of ways to look at this that isn't difficult. Just, you know, you've got to, you know, or you've got to come up with, you know, mnemonics or whatever it might be. You can remember whatever, you know, right. Password. That's why password lockers are a big help.
Is there any specific password lockers you recommend, or just Google and find one reputable?
Yeah, I think I think your best bet is to Google them now, because there are some that have been, you know, compromised, you know, so, it's a matter of, you know, I think it's buyer beware. You know, you just got to make sure that you're looking at the right ones and do your research, on what's the best ones to use out there. You know, and, you know, read and do some research and educate yourself as to what's going to be easiest for you to use, what's going to be, you know, most secure for you. And then follow that path. Some companies use them and they mandate them, right? Other, you know, but and from a personal perspective, you certainly should as well.
Makes sense. I hope I'm going to lose some sleep over this. I'm thinking in myself, how do I know that suggested password isn't compromised? There's someone on the other end giving it to me.
As you know, as somebody who's in it every day, you know, you can certainly overthink it, and you can certainly live in a state of paranoia. Because if you know, and look, there are guys in our organization that are, you know, beyond smart, and I'm glad they wear a white hat and not a black hat, because these guys are, you learn a lot from them and you can see what they really can do. And you're just glad they're on the good guy side, not the bad guy side.
Yeah.
You know, protecting our clients, protecting us, that kind of stuff.
You know, I almost forgot, and I do at the end, but I didn't even bring this up. We're talking about it. If this is a concern, how do I reach out to you and get a mm-hmm. little more information on how you can help us?
Yeah, I mean, if you're a company or an MSP, right, a channel partner, I mean, we have a couple of different avenues to get to us, right? IGICybersecurity.com is an easy one that kind of starts the journey for you. You know, Nodeware, NodeWare.com. That's our product page, you know, that we have for, you know, under our subsidiary called IGI Cyber Labs. So there's another way to start that journey. We're in, you know, you can hit us up on LinkedIn. We're in all sorts of social media platforms. So, you know, it's not hard for anybody to find us, you know, that's looking, you know, and, you know, looking for somebody to help them, right? If you're just, even if it's a question, like, I don't know where to begin. You know, a lot of times people call and say, I need a pen test. Okay, well, what does that really mean? Do you need a penetration test or do you need something else? And that starts the conversation, and we'll consult. Software side's easy. I mean, people are looking for this, you know, for product, and that they can do what they need it to do. And that's, you know, we are obviously very proactive in pushing that into the environment, but mm-hmm. you know, that's a great way to, you know, try it and buy it kind of thing. And that's what we work with. We, you know, we work with mainly the channel on that anyway, because we know that there's a one to many approach, right? They've got all the clients and customers. We don't want to disrupt that. We want them to bring us into their ecosystem and add another layer of security to what they're already doing today.
The solutions are out there. The links in the show notes to learn more about the company and Andrew. And one thing I think is interesting, and this so far from financial advice. I've never seen the numbers. We're not going to even talk about them. I just think it's wicked cool that you guys are a publicly traded company as well, correct?
Right. Yes, we are. And we're on the OTC QB, it's called. That's the Bulletin Board Markets. You know, we're in the process of, you know, we're looking at how do we, you know, move to the next level, which would be the NASDAQ, you know, and, we're, you know, looking at the markets and figuring out, you know, we've had an interesting 2022. Anybody who hasn't been sleeping, right, has seen a lot of, you know, bumpiness in this phase. Right. So we'll find the right time to do it. We realized it wasn't the right timing in 2022 to make it happen. But doesn't deter us, right? It's really, that's always additional catalyst for growth, and exposure to help our current shareholders, you know, and create greater value for the company and its shareholders and its employees. So we're still on that mission and path, and you know, we're excited about what 23 holds, and you know, we're excited about the growth opportunity of what we're facing in 2023.
Absolutely.
You know, we saw some, you know, saw 5x growth in our software business last year, and you know, we're anticipating some you know, some greatness coming out of that here in 2023.
Over 90% of the major companies we know, from Shopify to Wix to Amazon, HubSpot, they all got started in 06 to 10.
Yeah.
During a massive downturn. So in difficulty lies opportunity. Talk a little bit about the path you guys are on. So 2020 stunk, 2021 was confusing, 2022, I don't know what's happening with the economy. I just know it's things seem to be getting a lot better. So with an optimistic approach, tell me a little bit about that vision for the future. Let's do the whole wave a magic wand question where let's say, yeah. And you already addressed this. It's not like you just have an idea and then it is perfect. There's a little bit work to be done, but where do you see you guys going in 3, 5, 10 years?
It's you know, it's interesting. It's hard to quantify that time, you know, especially in technology and cybersecurity. I think we look at it and say, you know, it's really about execute. How do we execute now? You know, how do we take advantage of the market that's in front of us? You know, what are the things that we need to do to be successful? You know, and put the plans in place to do so, which is, you know, additional, you know, getting additional exposure, brand recognition, you know, driving the marketing, you know, aspect of who IGI is and getting out a great story. You know, and so as we look at 23, that's a big piece of this, right? It's really about, we saw a great second half of the year. How do we build on that and achieve goals, right? That's the biggest, you know, tactical achievement of goals, right? Get us in that space so I can shout from the rooftops how great we're doing and how much the organization is growing and how great our people are and how great our technology is and things like that. So I think that's the short-term, you know, vision. Like let's execute, you know, and really be good at what we are and show that we can, you know, hit the numbers and do some things that we've been building toward. Beyond that, I mean, look, there's all the sky's the limit, right? I mean, we look at it and say, how do we bring other technology to market, right? I mean, we don't want to be a, you know, one trick pony in terms of technology. We've got other things that we want to build and bring to market, especially in cloud-based security, you know, and drive that and create greater value for the company, as a result. You know, down the road, you know, how do you find like companies and fold them into your ecosystem, right? So through M&A and things like that, I think we've always looked at that as a growth catalyst in the future and leveraging our public capabilities to do that. So that's kind of that, I'll call it that midterm vision, right? Mm-hmm. To get, you know, create additional, you know, value. And the long term, you know, I don't know, maybe they, you know, I don't know what we do, right? I mean, I think it's a, that's the cool part about what we're doing. You can pivot many different ways. You know, technology is widespread and gives us lots of opportunities to do some unique things. And so yeah, that just creates excitement for the future once you can get through your short midterm goal.
I mean, last time I checked, there's limitless amount of rooftops that you can shout off of. So there's a lot of potential for growth and excitement. Cool. I'm going to go rapid fire.
Okay. Fire away.
Unless you think we missed something. The rapid fire round is short, sweet, just have fun, either or, fill in the blank questions.
Yeah.
Get to know you a little bit better.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think you've asked some great questions in terms of who we are and what we're trying to do and how we're impacting. You know, we're not just a Rochester company and we're based here in Rochester. We've got people all over the country. You know, we try to service, you know, lots of different clients and customers and have not only, you know, national reach, but, you know, ultimately global reach, you know, with what we do. You know, and I got a great team, great organization. And, you know, we're constantly looking at how do you add to that? How do you grow and bring, you know, and surround yourself by even greater people and smarter people, and, you know, to help build out the culture in the organization. Everyone says culture, right? But it's really about, you know, building an organization that moves in the direction that drives success and rewards people and makes people, you know, excited about coming to work every day.
Yeah, driving success for the people in it and the people that you get to serve. So I love that. And, you know, you're on Rochester Business Connections. It's the Rochester segment, but I've got listeners from Bangladesh to Canada. So you never know who will be able to help with this message. And
awesome.
For rapid fire, we'll start with just some fun stuff for the locals that listen. Weekends, no work, like I'm just doing something for myself. Where would we see you? If there's a getaway, an activity, what do you just do for fun?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question. It's variable, I guess, depending on the season, right? You know, so in the summer, you'll probably find me golfing at Monroe Golf Club. I'm a member, right? And it's a great place to kind of escape reality. and hang out with, you know, friends and do whatever. Other than that, you know, if it's summertime or even wintertime, because I like all of our seasons, you know, and I love winter. I'm one of the few people I think that live in Rochester that enjoy winter. You know, I'll be outside hiking, skiing, you know, I still play hockey. I mean, there's all sorts of cool stuff. And so it's finding ways to, you know, to just explore. We have a great region. I mean, I don't know how people don't want to live here. I mean, between an hour to Canada and, you know, in Buffalo and Niagara to, you know, half an hour to the Finger Lakes to Lake Ontario. I mean, it's just, there's so many things here to do that you just, you know, you don't get bored. I mean, my wife's a foodie, so, you know, it's all about where we go to eat, right? In many cases, or what's the next exploration around food, you know, as well. And it doesn't have to be just in Rochester. And Western New York provides so many different really cool opportunities to do so. So, you know, I like to be active and like to be outside and like to be doing a variety of things. Not a big fan of yard work, but it's a necessary evil. So.
I got
my kids
say,
are all growing up, so I can't really leverage them to do as much yard work as I could in the past.
Yeah, you might have to hire someone, or you do it yourself.
I do it myself. It's cathartic sometimes, gives you a little bit of an outlet.
I was going to say, I mean, if you like hiking, skiing, and hockey. You live, and if you like food, you're probably living in just as good of an area as you could be in the country, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, we live in a great place. I mean, I wish Rochester could really figure out how to retain the talent that we have in this area coming out of RIT and the University of Rochester. I'm an RIT grad, you know, from a graduate program in their business side. And, you know, and so how do we continue to build, you know, this gray area and get people to stay? And I know people go, oh, it's cold and it's gray. And I don't know. I don't really notice that the gray, right? I mean, I guess you just wake up and you kind of go, hey, it's another day. Let's go. And I think that's the attitude you have to have. We got to figure out how to, you know, retain and attract and keep young talent that's here and attract companies to do so. And I know difficult to do business in New York State, and, you know, in many ways from a business side of things, but We got to find ways around that. We got to attract. I mean, this is a great area to raise a family. It's a great area to live.
It is.
I was born and raised here, you know. So, and I've lived in Boston, and I've lived in Albany, I've lived in, you know, Worcester, Mass, and things like that. But, you know, came home. Right, it's one of those things. It's a great place, and you can work from any. I mean, the other day, if I wasn't running an IGI, I could be running another company from somewhere else and still live in Rochester, especially True. These days.
You're preaching to the choir. I think it's a beautiful place to live. You mentioned your wife's a foodie. Do you guys have favorite eats, like favorite kinds of food? I know this personally because I'm from here. You can find anything you want in Rochester, New York, and that's a fun thing about it.
Yeah, I mean, you can the eclectic mix, and we're eclectic. I mean, I'll eat just about anything. I mean, we love, you know, ethnic food. We love, you know, I mean, so there's so many offerings here in Rochester. You know, that allow, and if I can't find it, I'll go, you know, Buffalo is a great option. You know, it's an easy drive to get other stuff, or we love traveling anyway. So, you know, go to Europe, you know, all these things. So it's like, we try to not just be insular and stay in Rochester, but, you know, we're lucky that we have a melting pot. And I think that's driven by the university setting and the companies that were here for a long time, you know, that built up that population of ethnicity. And diversity in an area that you can get those things, right? Just had Korean food the other day and it was unbelievable. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's that kind of stuff that you just, you know, it doesn't take you long to find a really cool spot to go eat. So yeah, I mean, it's awesome. That's it's a really cool spot to be.
This doesn't have to be a local or regional answer. It can be, but what sports teams do you support? Are you a diehard of anything?
I'll be in trouble for this one. So I spent my formative years mostly in New England. So, and my parents are both from New England. So,
yikes. I know where this is going.
I'm a Bruins fan. I'm a Patriots fan. And I have been my whole life. So it's not a Tom Brady kind of thing. I lived through all those lean years of Steve Grogan and all those other guys that played for the Patriots back in the day. So, you know, Red Sox.
Red Sox or Yankees? Red Sox, yeah,
Red
Celtics.
Sox through and through. Yeah. And my wife is a Buffalo, you know, born in Buffalo and lived there for a number of years. So she's a Sabres and a Bills fan. And those are always secondary in my heart, right? You know, I root for the locals, but I'm a Boston guy, and so it's fun to watch, and it's always great to have the rivalries between obviously Sox and Yankees Boston, Buffalo, and all that cool stuff. So probably catch a lot of flack for that, but it's that's just kind of how I was raised.
You've been living the football lover's dream the past 20 years or so. It sounds like it's your wife's turn now with the Buffalo Bills.
I hope so. I hope, you know, it'd be great to see, right? I mean, I'd love it just for Western New York and, you know, for Buffalo and, you know, all these things. And it'd be awesome to see, the Super Bowl come to Buffalo. I think everybody would breathe a sigh of relief. And go, finally, you know, because after, you know, even the Sabres losing in the Stanley Cup final back in the 90s, that was a bitter pill to swallow as well. So it's like, you know, you want to see some success, right? I mean, they've had success. You want to see them kind of get to the Mecca. And for all the fans, I mean, best fans, I would say in many cases, the best fans in all sports, right? Our Buffalo fans, right?
Passion,
you know, passion, but they're cool. Like they're regular people, and they're not, you know, I'll leave all the rest of the cities out of that, but they're, you know, care about their team, whether they're losing or they're winning, right? They're still there supporting them, you know, 1,000%. And they're not fair weather fans that you get in some other places. So
we're going to do one more rapid fire.
All right, go ahead.
This one's weird. I'm thinking about it. I think this is an interesting question, though. So if someone were to play you in a Hollywood feature film movie, they're in your role, doing your thing, your day-to-day, who would you think would make a good fit to play you, to play the man himself?
I get a lot of people that say this to me, so it's not I came up with this, so I get this a lot. I get a lot of Paul Rudd. Okay. And I respect the hell out of that guy.
He's a good guy.
He's hilarious. I think he's, you know, creative and he's a good looking fellow, then I guess I'll go with that. But that's the one I get quite a bit is in that space. But I think he seems to be a down to earth guy. So I kind of stay within the, you know, it's nice to have somebody that you can kind of, you could see, like I could hang out and, you know, go for a bike ride with that guy, go cycling with him or have a beer with him and that kind of stuff. So it's he seems like that kind of dude. So
if he played
he's lowering his standards, he's lowering his standards incredibly to have to play me, but other than that, it would be,
you'd get to have a bike ride and maybe grab a drink with him if he was playing you, cause he'd have to figure out how it all works, but
that's right.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that's the one I always get. So, right, wrong, or indifferent. That's what that people say to me.
Tell us one more time. If we're from Rochester, it's possible we might even be able to grab you a cup of coffee, but if we're anywhere else in the globe, we can still find you guys online. Tell us a little bit more about what I should do next to stay in touch.
Well, I mean, you know, look, everybody, every company faces, you know, this isn't an IT issue anymore, cybersecurity. This is a board issue. This is a C-level issue, right? This isn't something, you know, this is happening at the CFO level now, not just the CIO level, you know, because there's so much at stake, right? Companies go out of business. Companies lose their reputation. Companies don't survive, especially mid-market companies, right? That don't, you know, they don't survive, being attacked, right? Having ransomware, having, you know, an incident. And, you know, and I think at the end of the day, people just need to take a look and say, how do I budget for this? How do I cover myself? Cyber liability insurance is getting harder to get. If you're not doing the right things, they're not going to insure you. You know, they're having to pay claims on this stuff now. And, you know, insurance companies, they don't like to pay anything, right, when it comes to claims, right? They don't want to pay out. They just want to keep collecting. So,
insurance companies are in the business of making money too, right?
Yeah, oddly enough, right? It's kind of weird, right? But, yeah, I mean, it makes the world go round. But, you know, yeah. I think people need to be aware. And if you don't know where to start, you got to ask the question. You know, and a lot of people are, you know, and look, we sell software. I want you to buy software. I love it. But, you know, we sell it through a channel that is kind of your guide, right? MSPs, MSSPs, VARs, those kind of folks that, you know, are your guide. They're your guides down this path. You know, but people have to be aware and have to understand, like, there's rules and regulations out there you got to follow. So if you're not compliant, you could run into problems. So these are all things that you can't bury this anymore. It's a sidelight. I don't want to spend any money on that because I don't think it's valuable. It's in our face, right? And cybersecurity is here to stay. It's the new, it's another cottage industry, right? It's like healthcare, never going away. You know, and there's a human element to it. There's a technology element, and you got to find a way to blend them together.
Yeah. What was the web address again? IGI.
IGICybersecurity.com. Nodeware.com is the other one. And, you know, find us down those paths. And, you know, I can give you all the, I can have you put all the social media links and stuff.
Yeah.
In your,
that's the beauty of the show notes. The show notes will have all these links. So use them, you know, make the show notes your friend, make me your friend and leave a review, reach out. Let us know what you learned from this. If you need me to help bridge the gap and kind of introduce you to Andrew, the company, let me know. And then I can send you the links, this and that. But don't be a stranger. And hey, man, Andrew, I appreciate you taking that. I know I've had a crazy day. You've had a crazy day. I really respect we were able to squeeze in this hour to bring some value. And I appreciate your time.
No, Ben, I appreciate you, my man. And, you know, taking me through this. Always good to spend some more time with you, and looking forward to, you know, staying connected.
Cool. Till next time. We'll talk soon.
All right. Take care. Have a good afternoon.
You too.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Rochester Business Connections. Don't forget to share this, rate, and comment on your favorite platform. You can also email me, ben@valbertmarketing.com. Let's connect soon. Until then, keep thriving, everyone.